This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes on Tuesday, May the 16th, and we're back in the office from Enterprise Rocks. What an event that was. Clearly, it's exhausted me, and I can't even pronounce my words correctly. I'm Rich Bradbury, of course.
And I'm Arvind Yuvraj.
If you were there, you know exactly what we were talking about. And if you weren't, we wish you were there, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, first off, I want to welcome back, of course, Jeff Sandu into the studio.
Yay.
What a time for you to come back, hey, Jeff.
I know. I just want to say that I didn't plan for my return to be this dramatic.
Right.
And I say dramatic is because, you know, over the weekend, not only that we were planning for Enterprise Rocks yesterday,
mm-hmm. yeah.
over the weekend, some really bad guys were planning on something really, really bad.
They were doing something severe. What is this thing that it's called WannaCry?
Yeah,
right?
So it actually makes you WannaCry if you actually got infected in this. It's a very clever name. So WannaCry is something that, it's a ransomware program.
What does that mean, ransomware?
So ransomware is, you know, we've seen this happen. This is not the first time it's happened before. Ransomware has been happening ever since. Since, you know, with the days of connected internet in that sense. It's basically someone comes in, does like a malicious program into your computer or your phone or even your car these days, and it's not able to function as what it's supposed to be, and you're supposed to pay someone this money. It's just a ransom,
right,
basically,
right?
So it's hold your devices into ransom.
I mean, it brought the NHS in the UK to a standstill.
Exactly. So this ransomware thing is not new. But this WannaCry ransomware, that is very, very new. So I spoke to Nigel Tan from IBM Security, and I've spoken to him many, 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 many times about, you know, ransomware, what does it do, and so forth and all. So I spoke to him again just on the phone recently and talked to him about, like, hey, Nigel, what's just happened recently? Because this is deemed as the largest ransomware attacks in history. So here's what he had to say.
What happened over the weekend was a rather big, massive ransomware attack that infected over 200,000 endpoints as of the weekend across 150 countries, right? And that's just over a period of 3 days. And basically what this did was it locked up, it encrypted the files on all these computers and actually held them for ransom, asking the users to pay to have them unlocked.
Yeah. 200,000.
Exactly.
That's a huge number.
And not only that, it's 200,000 over the, 3 days?
Wow.
3 days. 200,000 PCs. That's just insane amount of numbers that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
That's why this is deemed as like the largest attack in history. And I really, again, I did not pick this date to come back on live radio.
You see, we wanted a tech guy. You know, what happens over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
The biggest ransomware thing ever.
What I'm confused about is why is this, like, we've had ransomware before.
Yeah.
And people have been able to stop it fast.
Yeah.
And it's been there for decades, I think. But, you know, what I don't understand is what makes this, why is this so difficult to put a stop to? Like, if they found out, you know, why can't they just do it immediately, like within a couple of hours?
So basically, why is it unique as well, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How did it spread? Over 200,000 PCs in 3 days. I mean, ransomware, like I mentioned, is not something new.
Yeah.
It's been done before. So why did this suddenly spread like wildfire? So
mm-hmm.
Nigel actually filled me in on this. I asked him, why is this unique? So here's what he had to say.
I think what happened was it acts very much, as you mentioned, like a typical ransomware from a user's perspective, right? So it locks the files. It actually asks for payment. And one of the things that this does actually is it steps up the payment. So if you don't pay within the first 2 hours, the ransom goes up, right? And it keeps on increasing over time. So it is also, that's one of the things that sort of urge people to pay off quickly as well, just because they don't want to, you know, get hit with a heavier ransom in the future. Now, specifically about WannaCry and what's kind of unique about this is that, firstly, it used an exploit that was actually released by a group called the Shadow Brokers. And that was specifically targeting a vulnerability in the Windows system, right? Microsoft had actually released a patch already since March, but organizations hadn't got around to patching up their systems. And as a result of that, the virus, the ransomware actually spread widely. Mm-hmm. The other thing also that we found out about this is that it uses a very strong 2048-bit RSA encryption to encrypt the files, which actually means that while it's actually slower to encrypt the files, it makes it much more difficult to unlock them, right, by brute force attacking themselves. So a lot of organizations, basically, if they don't pay the ransomware, the files are lost, unless they're able to restore it from backup. The third thing that we also found specifically about this malware was that it was built in a modular format. Most ransomware out there is typically done by one person, and it's not modular. So let me explain what modular is. Modular software is something that a lot of legitimate software manufacturers do, where they make modules, right, or bits of software, and then put them together, because different people are specialized in building those particular aspects of the software. What we saw here was that different groups, we suspect different groups built individual parts and then brought them together to make this WannaCry ransomware. So it kind of tells us that we're dealing with a bunch of people here, and they're certainly not amateurs. Mm. They're professionals.
That's terrifying. So there's a whole bunch of people somewhere working together to create something and just adding bits onto it to make it, you know, if you want to do something special with this particular piece of ransomware, you call up some guy, or I assume.
It's like an add-on that you
get. Yeah.
Can, you
know? Yeah. It's like in-app purchases. Pass. Yeah.
And I mean, after listening to that, I mean, it shows that Microsoft is not like they haven't faced this before. I mean, they've faced it. They've even fixed it before. This is more like a mutant version or variant of that older ransomware.
Exactly, yeah. So this is something that Microsoft knew about this. Mm-hmm. They even sent out a patch for all the devices that were vulnerable. But again, that shows how many people are actually updating their software when it's needed to update for various different reasons. I can understand why. But on the consumer side, if you were, you know, infected by this as a consumer, wow, why didn't you update? I mean,
can I come to that?
Yeah.
I can tell you why, because we know how bad piracy is in Southeast Asia.
Exactly.
And once you've downloaded that piece of software, you can't update.
You can't update, yeah. Right. So this has obviously infected a lot of pirated softwares. And pirated softwares generally would have affected on the consumer side. But the 200 over 1,000 numbers is actually reported numbers from organizations. These are not, you know, me and you kind of guys. These are organizations who've reported that they've been hacked. Mm-hmm. Now, they... you know, so you got to question them. Like, hang on a minute, if you're an organization and you have been infected by this, why? Yeah. Because you should have been already updated the patch, even if you're using an old Windows. Or you should have just upgraded to Windows 10 or, you know, the latest Windows, because it seems to be affecting the older Windows. So what I asked Nigel is, like, how do I get infected by this? So this is what he said.
Yeah, so actually, that's probably how the first infection that happens in an organization is either through a spear phishing email, which entices the user to either click and open an attachment or follow a link. Or it could be a drive-by download where a user visits a website that has been hacked and compromised, and that website then exploits a vulnerability on the endpoint to download the ransomware. Now, once that first foothold is obtained in an organization, the ransomware actually spreads through the vulnerability. So from then on, you don't actually need people to click links or visit websites. It just automatically propagates throughout the network if endpoints and servers are vulnerable. And that's one of the reasons why this spread so quickly, was because it was exploiting that vulnerability in the Windows operating system that caused it to go spread out like wildfire, and infect over 200,000 endpoints by the end of the week.
Drive-by downloads and spear phishing.
Dude, what is that?
You know, these guys, drive-by downloads, that's really cool. So if you're wondering what is a drive-by download, it's basically if the server has been infected and you're visiting the site, you may get like a pop-up, sometimes not even a pop-up. It just quietly downloads a software, which is this ransomware.
In the background.
Okay. Without you even knowing. So again, you know, just install a really good antivirus software, malware protection app, it will kind of notice you, tell you, gives you a warning, like, hey, something's been downloading. Is this something that
but
you
most
really
people
want?
Just go, most oh, it doesn't just, matter.
Yeah, and
ignore
the thing
it.
Is,
right?
Yeah, ignore
yeah.
it.
And you would ignore it because it becomes annoying. Because yeah. when there isn't a case like this, it mm-hmm. keeps popping up every single time for various different reasons. And people would then just, like, you know, silent all these, you know, alert messages and ignore them, right? And once you do that, you are at risk. And then this is what happens. Now, who's at risk here is also very crucial. So here's what Nigel had to say.
Yes, I think all organizations, no matter the size, are certainly at risk. Again, as I mentioned, the way that the ransomware propagates itself using the vulnerabilities will place any organization at risk. Now, so it's important to note the vulnerability was actually identified and patches were released by Microsoft 2 months ago, mm-hmm. right, in March. It's just that organizations haven't gone around to patching them up. And as a result, that's one of the main reasons why they're at risk. So any organization of any size would definitely have to review all their systems and make sure that they're patched up to the appropriate levels.
So easy, right? Just basically follow the procedures that has been around for ages, ever mm-hmm. since the internet was born. You know, they always say update, 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 and backup as well. Yep. And people tend to forget that, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It makes you wonder, like, how many people, if it spreads so fast, how many people are not protected properly? Like,
exactly.
Just basic antivirus and yeah. firewalls and updates, like yeah. what you said. Yeah.
You see, the thing is, we've been living in a bubble for so long. And we have, right? And we've just been doing what we want, and everything's been nice and safe. And it's not until something like this comes along and suddenly shuts a whole bunch of stuff down and makes everybody panic that you go, maybe I should be doing what I've been told to be doing
yeah. the moment you buy a PC.
Right.
And yeah. what if we're going to go for a short break in just a moment, and if you think this is just a global problem, well, think again, because in Malaysia it has been here already. A few companies have been affected. Oh, and right. also, just to give you like a warning, like a...
Don't scare us.
I want to scare you here. So it mentioned that this does a 2048-bit SSL certificate encryption onto any, you know, documents or files that you have. It takes about 1,000 times longer than a normal encryption to break this encryption. So if you think you could crack this code, you're wrong.
We can't.
You have to pay that $300 in Bitcoin within 2 hours of you being infected.
So or format your PC.
Or format your PC and lose everything. So, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Jeff will be terrifying us a little bit more. You are, of course, listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Arvin, and Jeff. We'll be right back after this.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is
Arvin Yuvaraj
with
Jeff Sandhu here.
Jeff Sandhu is in the studio with us, terrifying us about this thing called WannaCry. It's infected how many around the world?
Nearly 200. Well, more than 200 over 1,000 machines have been infected.
Right.
Actually, it's a lot more than that because these are reported cases.
Right. So this is a terrifying thing, right? And we could all potentially, if we're not careful, and you haven't upgraded your software, be held to ransom, right?
Yes.
Where on earth did this software come from?
Aha! I thought you would never ask me that. Well, interestingly, some recent developments are coming out. Apparently, this ransomware shares the same code with the Sony hack that was done by North Korea. So people are saying that, oh, this could be a North Korean tie and so forth and all. However, I spoken to Nigel and I talked to him about, you know, is this something that Edward Snowden, you know, from the NSA kind of warned us about? And, you know, a lot of these agencies, these spying agencies, they have the capabilities of doing things like this. And, you know, this was obviously something from the NSA, but it has taken away from them and given to the bad folks. So
it's been repurposed.
Repurposed. So here's Nigel explaining of what exactly happened. Where did this come from?
Well, Jeff, yeah, I think a lot of the media reports that have come out are pointing towards the exploit tool allegedly being done by the NSA and then stolen by the shadow brokers, which have then released it out on the dark web. Mm. But more importantly, I think, is that in the dark web and how these hackers operate, one, there is a marketplace within the dark web where people can buy and trade these exploit kits, right, and vulnerabilities. And that's certainly, I think, what has been done here. A bunch of, hackers have gotten together and built this you know, pretty devastating ransomware, and then let it loose into the wild. And then that's basically wrecked the havoc that we've seen.
Havoc, indeed.
You love the names, don't you?
Man, I mean, just listening to the dark web, shadow brokers, spear phishing, drive-by downloads.
These are real gangster terms in the internet world.
This fella knows how to sell his product.
Exactly.
Why does it have to be shadow brokers? Why can't it just be Johnny McKinsey? Or
I don't know. Well, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, a lot of these guys, I assume at one point, would have been gamers, right?
Yeah.
And they don't exactly come on and have a gamer name of John.
Well,
or, you know, so they've got to have something. Or Douglas.
Well, I tell you, the gaming that they're playing is a lot of money involved here, because this hacking game that they're playing is just insane. So now you may be thinking, you know what, this is just going to happen around the world. It's not going to happen here in Malaysia and all. Like, you're wrong, though, because it has
already
here in Malaysia. So I spoke to CF Fong. He's the executive director of LGMS and also an ethical hacker that I've spoken to before about ransomware, have warned you guys, but here's what he had to say about how many Malaysians, are we Malaysians safe?
Well, I kind of doubt it, but I think in Malaysia, most of the time, when we receive calls like these, usually people will just, they will not report it. It's just that it doesn't mean that we do not have any incidents happen, but just that as part of a culture, usually don't report cases like this to the authority.
Yeah, so here's the CF talking about how many here in Malaysia have been reported.
Globally, I have no idea because not all of the cases are actually reported. But in Malaysia alone, among our friends, among the IT security vendors, we do have some informal calculations. As far as we know, currently there are more than 10 cases was confirmed and reported. And hopefully we will not see more, but I am kind of skeptical about that.
You see, you know, more than 10 have been infected. I tell you, if you've been listening to Tech Talk before, you may have been saved.
May well have been, right?
Yeah, may well have been. But, you know, this really is just, it's ridiculous that this thing has happened. Because, yes, granted, there are so many people been affected by this. But it's not something that you have no way of avoiding it. Because Microsoft did release a patch about this 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And these guys clearly knew that, you know, there are some people who just don't care about it. And there you go, 200,000 people.
I mean, how the thing is, how does it get into our machine, and how do we know, you know, that we're infected?
Yeah, so how do you know if I'm infected? Yeah. Because, you know, most of us, when we download something and then our PC acts funny, we just leave it and don't care about it. Right. So here's CF explaining how to know if you're infected.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know that if you're infected, it's very easy. I mean, once you get infected, you'll probably see a pop-up box that tells you to pay, and your files are encrypted and all. So as a preventive measures, if you haven't been patching your systems, your old systems, for a while, so it's good to go to Microsoft website and download the patch to patch it immediately. At the same time, also make sure your antivirus programs are updated. And of course, as what we always tell our client and our friends, do a backup on your files. Because if you're without any backups today, it's just like without any antivirus. Backup is as important as having an antivirus software installed in the system nowadays.
How many of y'all do backups?
I've got one. I'm backed up. But I'm also on an Apple computer. So far, from what I understand, Apple computers are safe, right?
Yes, because this only affects Windows 8, Windows XP, Windows Server 2003. And these are, you know, obviously operating softwares that Microsoft do not sort of give you a real-time protection anymore. So it's as simple as just like, you know, CF said, just go on to Microsoft.com, go on to the update site. If there's an update for your...
Download it, lah.
Download it and install it. It just takes a quick time. Anyways, if you didn't update, and you have been infected, and you don't have a backup of your stuff, and you know that, you know, oh my God, do I have to pay this $300 in Bitcoin? Here's what CF had to say.
Well, not necessarily. Normally, we would just tell you not to pay unless you absolutely have no other ways to go. But usually, we just tell you not to pay because paying the virus author doesn't guarantee that you will get your files back. That's why, unfortunately, if you got hit, you can actually try your luck by going to a website to try to see whether the website has a solution for you. Mm. Now, this website is called nomoreransom.org. What you can do is upload one of the encrypted files onto this website, and the website will determine if there are any solutions out there that can help you to decrypt your files. But looking at a WannaCry case, so far, unfortunately, we don't see any solutions right now.
Yeah, and if you've been infected, I kind of pressed the CF here. If I have been infected, what are the first steps that I need to take? So here are the precautionary measures that you need to take.
Okay, if you got hit by WannaCry ransomware, first thing you need to do is to disconnect your system from any form of network. If you got your PC connected in your home network through the Wi-Fi, get it disconnected first, because once it gets connected to the internet, to the network, it will just continue spreading. So first thing to do is to disconnect your PC from the network. And whether or not to report it is entirely up to you. But if you like to report the cybersecurity, I mean, just go ahead. There's nothing, it's good to just add on to the statistics.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's it then. Disconnect the internet. Make sure you're updated.
Make sure you're backed up.
Go back to the Stone Age. So where else are we at, Alvin? What else has been happening?
Okay, so there's a latest update on this. But before that, I just want to say, I think the worst part that comes out of things like this is that these WhatsApp messages that get forwarded with a lot of false info, I think people should stop doing that.
Don't click on any links.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Even if your mother sends you a text on WhatsApp saying like, oh my God, Richard, please check this out. Don't click on it. Call your mom. Find out. Mom, did you really send this?
Right.
And verify it first.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Yeah. So the latest update, according to a report on TechCrunch just a few hours ago, the ransomware is still spreading all over the world. A kill switch that was discovered by accident seems to be helping quite a lot. It doesn't stop the malware from spreading, but it sort of prevents it from activating the code that encrypts and ransoms your data.
Right. So very quickly, it's kind of the way it was discovered is a little complicated, but here's the gist of it. A security researcher noticed that the ransomware called out to his specific unregistered domain. Mm-hmm. This is because some network environments contained VMs, virtual machines, that could study malicious code, and these domains would be able to capture all outgoing data, like an attempt to connect to a domain and return traffic of its own choosing. So what this security researcher did was they immediately registered that domain so they could monitor the traffic. They basically thought it would just help track the spread of WannaCry, but what actually happened was, by registering that domain, they effectively killed the whole attack.
Yeah, because now when they code ping that domain, it returns saying that it was registered, and therefore the ransomware could never activate itself.
Exactly. So that's that technique still works. It doesn't help systems that are already infected, but it does prevent the spread a little bit. The bad news is, researchers at Checkpoint spotted a new variant of WannaCry, oh my word, that used a different kill switch domain. It pings it, and if it finds it isn't registered, it activates the ransomware. Of course, they immediately registered it, preventing the new mutant malware from activating.
Yeah, there's a small sliver of silver lining, if you can even call it that, of doing this, is that the researchers get a ping whenever the ransomware infects a new computer, so they're able to detect how many systems are being infected, and they just reveal that a new infection was popping up every second on this blog post of theirs.
What?
Yeah, so every second a new system is being infected by this ransomware.
Wow.
That's how many pings they're getting.
So, in a nutshell then, the only real solution here is for vulnerable machines to be inoculated, mm-hmm. for want of a better phrase, right? Mm-hmm. Microsoft stepped up and took the rare step of issuing a patch for old unsupported systems of Windows that are still found out there in the wild. There's many of those across Southeast Asia, we know that, and particularly in North America as well. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean WannaCry won't affect newer systems like Windows 10 at some point, right, Jeff?
We never know, because we can never say we are fully protected in the digital world. There is always a back door. Apparently, even if you've paid the ransom, the ransomware of $300 in Bitcoin, and you get back your files, the back door is still open.
So basically, at any point, we are not safe, full stop. If we are connected to the internet?
We're never safe, but make it harder for the cyber criminals to breach in.
Through.
The thing that this has happened is that they didn't target Windows 7, Windows XP users and so forth. And no, these guys just blasted out a million over emails to like a million different people.
Hoping somebody would pick up.
If 1% picks it up, because this 1% will spread onto their own networks, 1% picks it up, there you go.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, we have a little bit of Joan Armour trading. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back, folks, to Enterprise BizBytes with Arvin and myself. I don't know about you, but after all of that, I think I need to move away from something all techie because my brain is like, I'm terrified now because I have an old Windows machine at home, which is legally registered with, you know, Microsoft, of course. But and now I've got to go home and update everything. Anyway, if you didn't already know, today is World Teachers Day, which is a UNESCO-supported holiday that honors the critical role teachers play in maintaining education systems around the globe.
Yeah. Now, one of the initial goals behind UNESCO's efforts was to establish universal primary education by the year 2020, which, according to the UNESCO Institute for Statistics, would require countries to recruit a total of 12.6 million primary teachers. Yeah, that's a lot. But beyond the numbers, World Teachers Day serves to also highlight the need for quality training programs geared towards enhancing the skills of men and women, devoting their careers to the educational betterment of future generations. Teaching is not easy. I mean, have you tried it, Rich? Like, have you tried teaching?
Very briefly, yes. Just in when I was living elsewhere and I was supposedly teaching English to a group of 4 or 5 year old kids, I think I managed 3 or 4 days and realized that teaching is just not for me.
Was it the kids?
It was the kids, yes, and the noise and the early mornings and all of that in a combination. You know, people who do this profession, I honestly take off my hats. You know, it's a profession that often is overlooked, and people say, oh, he's just a teacher. They get a lot of time off per year and rubbish. Anyway, we did manage to find an article that was published a while ago, and this is interesting because what it does, it looks at famous artists and writers and poets and who were once upon a time teachers too, in primary school, in fact. We're not talking about, you know, university lecturers or anything like that. We're talking about primary school teachers right down there in the mud of things. And first up, we have...
First up, we have J.K. Rowling. She sounds familiar. Have you heard of this name
may
before?
May have heard her before.
Has she done anything notable?
You know, I don't know. Something to do with wizards?
That guy.
Yeah, girl.
Okay. So, J.K. Rowling, the sorceress who brought beloved characters such as Professor Snape and Dumbledore, she's, of course, the author of Harry Potter, all the Harry Potter books, to life, was once an instructor herself, though very briefly. J.K. Rowling taught English as a second language in Portugal and began writing the Harry Potter series during her stint there.
Oh, I see. Secondly on the list, a man I kind of have a love-hate relationship with. It is Mr. Dan Brown. One of these people that whenever you need to find a book and there's nothing else on sale, there's always a Dan Brown book.
Yeah.
You know, they're always there.
So do you love the books and hate the movies?
A bit of both. A bit of both. Okay. Right? It's kind of easy beach reading, you know.
It is.
So believe it or not, he wasn't born writing thrillers that translate action movies that make millions at the box office. His dad was a maths teacher and a textbook writer. When he was young, Dan Brown traveled down his career path, focusing on education. He taught English and Spanish in his hometown before, of course, becoming a gazillionaire.
And then, of course, there's William Golding, the author for a lot of the Flies. Who better to characterize the brutality of young, lawless boys than a high school English teacher? I feel like he took all his frustration and all his nightmares that kept happening to him every night and he put it into a book. But really, William Golding, the author of Lord of the Flies, perhaps the most nihilistic chronicle of human nature, was also an instructor of both English and philosophy.
He was.
Yeah, and then we move on to George Orwell. Before writing high school reading lists such as 1984 and Animal Farm, George Orwell thought at a tiny boys' school himself.
1984 is actually one of my favorite books of all time. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, and I'm sure most of you have.
And it's inspired a bunch of other pop culture stuff, movies and other books as well.
Moving on, Philip Pullman. You were not familiar with this author though, right? He did a whole bunch of books called His Dark Materials. He's been interested in children's literature for longer than he's been reading it. At 25, he began teaching in middle schools in the UK, and from there went on to teach older students. On his personal site, he quips, "I have maintained a passionate interest in education, which leads me occasionally to make foolish and ill-considered remarks, alleging that not everyone is well in our schools," and thank goodness he does that.
And then, of course, we move on to another unknown name, Stephen King.
The great unknown Stephen King.
You know, who's
that?
Yeah, who is that? 2 years before he was able to sell his first novel, which was Carrie, Stephen King worked as a teacher in Hampden Academy in Maine. As legend has it, he was grading papers in the teacher's lounge when his wife called him at school, which is a rare occurrence considering the couple didn't own a phone, to tell him his book would be published. And
bless.
That was the beginning of a legend.
I dread to think how many books he's actually written at this point, you know?
I don't know. There's some books that people don't know of. He writes...
Under a pseudonym, right?
Yeah, under a pseudonym.
Yeah, in fact, a couple of pseudonyms. All right, of course, these are all very well-known authors for the most part. Mm-hmm. But for those people that, you know, Arvin, did you have a teacher or a particular group of teachers that really inspired you?
You see, that's the thing. When you think about teachers in school, when we were growing up, you remember the ones that were not good, like the ones that you didn't like, because you remember their faces, and the ones that were good, you kind of don't take note of. But there were a few. There was an English teacher that I had in secondary school who was very influential. Mm. I had a couple of problems in high school, as we all do. And she helped me to cope with those and gave me advice and stuff. Her name was Mrs. Hindon. There was another guy, his name was Mr. Christopher, and he was in like Form 1. And he was the nicest teacher I've ever known. He was just patient, and he embodied that everything that a teacher should be. He was patient. He just had a passion to teach. His career in that school didn't end so well because kids can be mean.
Right.
Yeah, but him. But most of all, just one more. Like, there was a teacher in college that I had. He was a lecturer, and he kind of introduced me to the concept of learning more than you learn from textbooks and a syllabus.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where I picked up that you can know so much more than what they teach you in institutions.
Look outside
your box. So right. Those three, I think, notable ones.
Okay, I've got a couple. The first was a woman called Mrs. Langham, mm-hmm. And she was a swimming teacher of all things, and I couldn't swim at all. But she literally threw me in the deep end, mm-hmm. and it was the most horrifying thing for her to do at the time, but it taught me so many lessons, you know, how to think quick, how to not drown,
and
how to swim. But she did it out of love, because the deep end, in fact, wasn't a deep end. I was just convinced it was at the time. And finally, there was this teacher called Mr. Rochard, who he told me I would bite my words and I wouldn't pronounce things properly. And it's like, Richard, could you please enunciate? And if it wasn't for him, obviously, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be where I am now and doing what I'm doing. Nice. All thanks to him. Mm-hmm. Right, we're going to take a very short break, of course. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Arvin. Jeff has scared us off. He's now doing all kinds of stuff to the...
to protect his own PC.
Yeah, exactly. And we're trying to convince him to do all of ours. Taking a short break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Break from midfield. BFM 89.9.
You tuned into Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and Arvin Yuvraj. Right, let's talk about drones for a second.
Let's.
Of course, let's. A Latvian tech company, they're claiming they have the world's first super-powered drone, which lifted a daredevil skydiver aloft from where he parachuted safely back down to Earth. So this drone manufacturer is called Aerones. And they performed this test this week in a secret drone diving operation.
Yeah, so they conducted the test in some wild, isolated central region of the Baltic state.
Right? So somewhere in Russia.
Somewhere in Russia. This powerful beast of a drone measures about 3.2 square meters and spots 16 rotors.
What?
Yeah, it weighs 70 kg and it can lift up to 200 kilos. How heavy are you, Rich?
70 kg.
Yeah, 70 kg. I'm about 82.
Right.
So
it could easily lift the two of us.
The two of us, yeah. So we could go gliding on this drone. And I last week we covered something about a drone dropping drugs in the prison.
I know where you're going with this, yes.
So if it can drop drugs in the prison, what's stopping this drone from lifting prisoners off? Like, so
right.
An app, a grab app for prisoners in prison with their WhatsApps. They're like, hey, I need a drone. And the drone comes in, lifts one
Uber
off.
Their way
yeah,
out
Uber
of
there.
It.
Go get some new Very clothes,
cool.
come back.
Very cool. Right. So Aerone's team of engineers first came up with this idea of heavy-duty drone a couple of years ago, apparently. Mm-hmm. They've even been testing this monster for a few months now. And the same drone was used back in January to debut something that they call drone boarding. What is that?
Nice.
Anyway, what it does, it tows snowboarders at high speed across a frozen Latvian lake. Sounds incredibly safe. But this week's operation was even more dangerous because the drone basically collected a man from the top of a tower and then lifted him up about 330 meters in the air. That's terrifying, man.
And that's very high to be holding onto a drone, of all things.
What if the battery would have died or something like that?
Ah, that's the thing. It says the battery can only last for about 10 minutes.
No, not,
yeah,
no.
So, yeah,
no.
So you need to get down before the battery starts beeping.
Not playing with that, no.
So what they did was, first they tested the drone by lifting and dropping a dead weight of about 90 kg to make sure that it was safe. And then, Ingus Oskans,
I have no idea how you pronounce that.
Yeah, I'm sure I butchered his name. Who is the daredevil skydiver who did this? He literally took the plunge in what is believed to be the world's first drone diver. So basically, the drone works more like a parachute.
Right.
You hang on to it and it glides you down to the ground. Only difference is that you have more control because drones can be controlled and parachutes cannot.
Now, here's the thing. There's going to be a point, right, where you're going to be able to control that drone by yourself with your handphone.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then you're like Iron Man.
Yeah, then you are like Iron Man.
But with a drone.
With a drone.
Yeah.
And you have to charge it.
I'm pretty sure they can attach it to your back, so then right. It becomes a jetpack.
Oh, yeah. We are going somewhere now, aren't we?
Yeah,
we are. All right, so apparently this daredevil, of course, loved it and said it was so much fun, like being in a playground in childhood, except he's 330 meters up in the air.
I don't remember doing that when I was a kid.
No, me neither. But he also added that, of course, there were still risks in doing it the first time. Being lifted the first 5 meters was probably the most nervous moment. But the drone lifted me, and 2 seconds later, I was under the parachute canopy.
Oh, so that was the most the nervous moment for him. So Arun CEO Janice Putrams, who was in charge of the drone control, said that we don't need a helicopter to skydive anymore. The drone jump is a completely new way of base jumping, and it makes it possible to base jump from any place, in cities, in deserts, in mountains, wherever the drone can take you.
All right, so this is the part that I like. The company hopes to exploit the drone's abilities to perform rescue operations as well. Rescue, Arvin, yeah? Not jailbreak.
Nope.
Like when there are people trapped on the roof of a burning building or other difficult to reach locations, like during a flood, or when roads can't be used anymore, you know. Great idea, though, that.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, if you've got some 70 or 80-year-old woman who's slowly managed to scramble her way to the roof, and you say to her, Auntie, I need you to
grab onto
the
drone. Yeah, is she gonna, you know?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Unless the drones have ways to secure people. You know, like handcuffs.
I don't know if handcuffs would be nice. Maybe like a hammock, maybe.
Yeah, handcuffs. Handcuffs is
what's on your mind today?
It's the wrong use of word.
Yes.
The limitations to this drone are that they're super expensive. It costs about 165,970 ringgit to build.
Wow.
Yeah, that's like, how many cars could you buy with that? Flight times are restricted to about 10 minutes maximum, because that's how the onboard batteries can last. In theory, the top speed is about 150 km per hour, but the piloting process makes it very difficult at that velocity. So drone boarding and drone diving daredevils have to settle for speeds of about 60 km per hour, which is less than half. But I guess that, you know, when you're floating in the air and having fun in it, you know, doesn't matter.
It's still pretty cool, right?
It's still pretty cool.
All right, we've come to the end of the show. We're going to have to wrap up. And what we like to do, obviously, as at the end of every show, we do a quick recap of the stories we've covered on today's episode.
Yeah, so we started off with a complete rundown of the WannaCry ransom that has been sweeping the world over, and you know, over the weekend. There's seriously a lot of info that was covered during that segment, like what it means, what we can do to stay safe and protected, who is at risk, as well as the latest update on the kill switch. So if you missed that part, do yourself a favor and go stream this episode on the BFM app and get yourself updated.
Then, of course, since it's Teachers Day, we spoke about some famous authors and writers who used to be teachers, names like J.K. Rowling, Stephen King, Dan Brown. These are on that list, and we covered this list as a way to celebrate teachers and also drop some trivia on you.
Yeah, and finally, we covered a story on a new super drone that can lift up to 200 kg, meaning it opens up the doors to new forms of base jumping and parachuting and, you know, extreme sports in general. The company that made the drone, however, also wants to use it, is also looking into using it for rescue missions.
Okay, so coming up next is the Breakfast Grill replay with the Minister of Health, Sri Dr. Subramaniam Sathasivam. He was on the show today between balancing his positions at the Ministry of Health and as MIC President. He now has a digital footprint with the launch of his own app. He spoke about the current issues surrounding the vital portfolio under his watch, from the rising cost of medical care to delivering a quality healthcare service for the nation. That's coming right up after the news at 1 p.m.
Yep, so that's a wrap on Enterprise Biz Bytes. Again, if you miss any of today's stories, feel free to get them on the BFM app, available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. For Jeff Sandhu at the top of the program, this is Arvind Yuvraj with Rich Bradbury. Have a pleasant afternoon, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.